Blog Talk Radio.
Good afternoon and welcome to Bigfoot and Company. This is Dr. John wishing everybody a super Monday afternoon. It's beautiful here in Myrtle Beach. Hot, but always beautiful. And we've got some great guests lined up today. First of all, I want to say hello to my co-host and friend, Matt Delf. How are you doing today, man?
I'm doing excellent, excellent. A little bit of rainy day, but it's Monday, but we still got to do it, so doing good.
That's right. That's right. Glad to have you here with us. Well, we got two wonderful ladies who are our guests today. First of all, from Tennessee, we have Jan Carter. How are you doing today, Miss Jan?
I'm doing fine. Doing really good.
Well, that's good. Who's playing the music?
Not me. Not me.
Okay, Matt,
not
is
me.
That you?
No, it ain't me. I hear it, though.
Well,
I do, too. Yeah, I can hear it, but we haven't got it.
Well, that's okay. Anyway, Robin McCray, how are you from that man in the Midlands, South Carolina?
Hello? I can't hear anybody.
I can't hear anybody either. All I can hear is music.
That's
the first thing. Hopefully
it'll
stop.
Yeah.
And it's getting louder.
I wonder if we all get off and recall in.
There we go.
No, there it goes. Goodness gracious.
Yeah, I don't know. We might have to put some provider, like I'm getting a new cell phone, like I'm getting a new internet provider. They don't work very well. But anyway, here we all are. And Robin McCray from the South Carolina, how are you doing today?
I'm good. Thanks, John. Glad to be here.
We are glad to have you. Now, of course, this is Bigfoot Company. We've got a lot to talk about Bigfoot and everything. But first of all, Matt Depp said that he had a story he would like to tell us.
Yeah, it's as everybody knows that knows my daughter, she big-time animal lover, big-time animal lover. Well, she keeps a box in her car, and it's her rescue box is what she calls it. And she keeps a pair of gloves, and anytime she'll see a possum hit on the side of the road or in the road, she will pull over, and where there are marsupials with the babies, she'll go and she'll check to see the dead possum if it has live babies. Well, I know it's strange, but, I mean, she loves them. Any type of animal she loves, totally loves. So she'll get out and she'll check. She saved 8 babies so far.
Wow.
So, yeah, yesterday she called
me. That's wonderful.
And she's like, a friend of hers had seen a bunch of baby skunks out in the middle of the road.
Oh, good.
So, so my child goes out there and snatches them all up and tracks down their mama right there up in the woods and releases them to the mama, and the mama walks up in the woods and doesn't get aggressive with her or anything, and they all follow. Now, when she first got there, one of the little ones, when she first got there, startled one little ones, and it sprayed a little bit. But other than that, when she first got there, one of them, the rest of them, after she initially, you know, started talking to them and they got a feel for her, they had no problem. One even walked up right up to her, picked it up and was holding it, and then, you know, she gathered them up in this little basket and took them up into the woods there, found where the mama had been, and released them all to the mama, and they walked all up into the woods. I thought that was kind of only my child would be out there gathering up
skunks. That's wonderful.
And possums, but had to brag on her a little bit there. She loves her animals.
Well, that's great.
Oh, yeah. That's wonderful. That is great.
And it kind of goes to show, because most of the time, you know, everybody think, oh, you're going to get sprayed, all this stuff. But the animals could sense her heart. You know what I mean? They could tell.
Yeah.
I mean, yeah. The only time that any of them even sprayed was when she first got there and it startled one little one and it sprayed a little. It wasn't a lot, just a little bit. And then after that, they were, boom, right up there with her. Kind of cool.
Oh, that's a great thing she did.
Mm-hmm.
Absolutely.
Yep.
That was my little story there. I thought it was kind of neat and interesting.
Absolutely. Now, Jan, I know that you foster kittens, and Robin, you have a complete menagerie at your house. It's wonderful.
Yeah. Yeah. My theory is whatever needs to be here is, and we don't turn them away.
No, we don't. It doesn't matter what it is. Unless it's a snake. Now, I do have a problem with some snakes.
I've had the snakes, but I don't deal with the venomous ones. I'm out of that.
Yeah, I don't deal with the venomous ones either.
Yeah, well, you ladies certainly do great things. I know that both of you have been heavily involved in the community for a long, long time. Jan, you co-authored a book, 50 Years of Coexistence with Bigfoot. Robin, you are always out there in nature helping Bigfoot community. Who wants to go first? Jan, how did you get started in this? Then we'll ask Robin.
How did I get started in it? I was born into it. Well, I mean, I don't know how else to explain it. My grandfather had made friends with one of the forest people, and by the time I was 7 years old, he actually had introduced me to this adult male and female, and they had twin children. And about, I think it was about a year later that they had the twins, and we would give them food, gift them gifts, everything from blankets to pots and pans, a little of everything. So it's just like, I don't know what it is to be normal and not have them.
Wow, that's a great story. So, Robin, how about you? When did all this start happening with you?
I don't remember when it didn't happen. I was little. I mean, you know, I was like 3 and 4 years old. I would go outside to play, and they would just show up. You know, I mean, I would ride my bike to the end of the road to where the woods were, and there would be 3 or 4 of them there every time I went. And they just, as I grew up, everywhere I lived, they just showed up, literally. I mean, they were mind-speaking with me when I was very, very small. My mom has always said that I had an imaginary friend that was taller than my dad and all covered in hair, but that I would talk to this being continuously. So I always just saw them in the flesh, or, you know, I'd heard about, they would talk in my mind. As I moved out of the house, it just became more. And wherever I would live at, they would just continually come in. It was just a normal everyday. I agree, Janice. It gets to the point where you don't know what it's like not to have them. And I'm glad. I feel blessed. I would never want to be without them.
Exactly.
But they just have always been there.
Either.
Yeah, I mean, if they want something, they simply tell you. You get it. I've had them 8 o'clock at night tell me to go to the store for turmeric and ground ginger for them. Or we need this, or we need that. And that's fine. I used to always put toys out for the kids. Like Janice, I'd put blankets out. You know, they would steal stuff out of my garage all the time. I kept the garage door open because they would come visit us, but that wasn't their actual home. Like, they had temporary shelters around on the property, but that wasn't where their actual home was. And so they would be at the house, and we would get really bad storms, and I'd just flip up the garage door so if anybody needed shelter, they could. After a while, they would just go in and help themselves to whatever was in the garage. They would take bags of clothes for my grandson. And then my daughter-in-law would put in there, and I'd be like, where are these clothes? And I'd find later the bag out in the woods, and 90% of the clothes gone. You know, I don't know if they ever put them on or if they didn't or what they did, but they had fun with them. But they
now,
get tools on the toolbox.
I'm sorry, go ahead.
Yeah, they would take tools out of the toolbox, and we couldn't figure out what in the world was going on with the tools. And it was like a year to a year and a half later, I got up one morning, and I walked out on the porch, and here's all these little, like, wrenches and screws. And I don't even know that they knew what to do with them, but they were all rusted and sitting on the porch.
Now, you mentioned the herbs and the spices stuff telling you to get this stuff. Can you explain to the people what they use certain herbs and stuff like that? Like, I know they use, like, garlic and different things.
Yeah.
Just kind of explain to them what they...
The garlic is more like an insect repellent is what my guys used it for.
Yeah, mine
too. Ginger, the ginger, you know, they use it for a variety of things. All these spices and herbs are medicinal for them. They have their own, you know, just like we have our own medicines, they use them for different medical situations.
Mm-hmm. And most people don't think that they use spar, but they do. They will actually.
Absolutely.
Go in and do a little bit of a cooking with spars. I've even ran across in northern states what we call Dutch ovens that they were actually using. And they had them along a river bank, that in a ravine, and it was in a ravine, and the caves were in the side of the bank, you know, that they used, and they had those Dutch ovens out there, and they were using them to cook in.
Yeah. They used to get, we had a bonfire pit right behind my house, and I always suspected they used fire anyway, just because of different things that I would find and see them do. And my kids were visiting from out of state, and brought the grandkids, and we had a big bonfire, and afterwards, we waited till it cooled off, and we took care of everything, you know, swept up after, so it was all done. And like an hour later, my son says, Mom, did you know the bonfire's going? Like all the wood's back over there, it's burning right away. And I went out there, and they were standing in the tree line with it. You know, after that, they weren't overly shy about it. I would look out my window, and they'd be starting, you know, getting the fire going. Go ahead.
When I was younger, I used to think, that my grandfather had taught them to roast marshmallows, which they made into a globby mess, you know, over the fire. But that is, you know, he might have taught them to do that, but he certainly didn't show them how to use fire because they already knew.
Yeah, in Michigan, they use it a lot. I mean, even if they have to go underground to the cave systems or whatever, they did. I mean, that's how they stay warm to survive all that cold. And one of the ones from my clan had bonded with a female out of Florida, and she hated coming to Michigan in the winter. She was cold all the time. We finally just said, why haven't you shown her how to, you know, make fire? Well, I don't know if she'd want to. I said, well, show her. And he did, and she eventually got the hang of it. But they've always used it, as far as I always knew.
Mm-hmm. I don't blame her for not wanting to go to Michigan with that cold weather. I hate the cold.
She's quite happy he's over here in South Carolina now.
Yeah, I'd say so. I can't handle that cold. Now, how do they start a fire? What do they use to start a fire?
Bob and I'll let you answer first, and then I will.
Okay. I've seen him do it both ways. I've seen him with sticks do it. I've also, you know, I know everybody likes to avoid the whole woo topic. I've seen them literally, like, create orbs in their hand and put it down into the fire, and it started. So, I mean, I can't speak for everybody. That's just what I personally watched. You know, I'm not going to say they haven't used stones and sticks because I've seen them hitting sticks and the rocks together to try to get a spark. So, I mean, obviously they do that as well. But I did, on more than one occasion, they would literally, it would almost look like an orb that they created in their hand, and they would put it in there, and it would just start it.
Well,
so James, I don't know what yours did, but I mean that's what I got with my guys.
Well, I know that Fox and his family used chert and obsidian, and they would strike the rocks together. The ones up in maybe I shouldn't give out exact location. I'm not going to give out exact locations, but the ones that I studied in Indiana rubbed the sticks together, and they had like a flat board and a little hole drilled in it, and they put like this moss stuff around the hoe. Once I got the spark to go, and they would twirl the stick really, really fast, and they can do it faster than we can, trust me.
Well, they
and
used to.
It would cause a spark, and then they would just sort of scoot it in to the, they peel the barks off of trees, and they would strip the arborvitae down, the bark, and they would make it like a starter fluid for their fire,
Well, we had these baskets that I had on the outside of my house under my windows, and they came, it looks like a dried moss in it. I mean, you can buy it at Walmart. They're just inserts. And they used to peel that out of it. They were forever taking those inserts out. And I would say, what do you want with those inserts? Well, we use it for fire. We use it to help make fire. And I'm like, okay, I can get as many of those as you need. So I was forever getting new ones, and they would take them. But that's what they claim they used them for.
Well, now, I never gave mine lighters or anything, but I have given matches before. A bit, the big matchbox stick matches.
Now, you had mentioned with the orbs, these are high energy beings. So they just generate, the energy from their body probably to create it. That's excellent.
Well, a friend of mine and I used to sit outside at her home, and they would literally be out there tossing these energy balls up like a baseball. I mean, it was hysterical. We sat there one night at her place. I was visiting her, and they were just out there tossing them up and down in the air like it was a ball. And I've seen them many times having them be followed around with these orbs.
Yeah. I mean, I have orbs, maybe I'm not a high energy being, I don't think, but I have a lot of orbs that show up around me, especially of the evenings. If someone takes a picture of me, and I don't like my picture to be taken because of that, because I've got orbs, and I even have a couple of times where these orbs were materializing into something else in the photos.
Okay, I got a question. And see, a lot of pictures that I've been taking in, I've had huge orbs next to me in the pictures. I just figured it was something, a flaw, with the camera or something like that, something that picked up. But I'd never known anything. Do you guys know anything about that? Like with me, I mean, there's been a lot. Me and my daughter have both had like big orbs of light right next to us during pictures being taken.
Yeah, Janice might have more insight. For me, I'm used to that. Like any pictures you would take at my home or in any areas that the foots are at, these orbs are all over the place. That night we did the bonfire with my son and his family. The foots were there at the same time. I mean, they were all in the tree line, and the tree line was not even 20 feet from the bonfire pit, and you could see all the eyes shine, and you could hear them walking back and forth, and you could see shadows of them walking back and forth. And every picture we took that night, there was hundreds of orbs in, like literally hundreds.
Well, my thoughts on orbs are, I'm not only into, researching the force people and stuff, I was brought up around them, so that's not, that's neither here nor there. But my other interest is in, I guess, ufology and ghost hunting.
Yeah, I think it all comes in one big pile, though. I mean, like, they all hang out together.
Yeah, so I have other fields of paranormal activity that I like to, investigate and participate in, and a lot of the orbs that come that are around me are actually spirits.
Yeah.
I guess is the best way. And ghosts, people don't usually believe in ghosts, but say for instance, I'm going to tell a true story here. My grandmother and me made a pact that whoever passed first would come back in some way, shape, or another and let the other know that there was such thing as a heaven. Okay. My grandmother passed away in the middle of the night at a nursing home when she was 100 years old. She lived to be an old, old lady. And anyway, all the lights, I was asleep. It was like 3 a.m. in the morning. I'm asleep. Everybody in the house is asleep. And my bedroom light gets turned on. Now, this isn't one of these little flip switches. This is an actual switch where you have to push it up and down to get it turned on and off. So the bedroom light comes on. And I'm like, well, maybe it's got a short. So I got up and, no, it's turned on. So I flipped it off. Went back to bed. Got back in the bed. Flip, it comes on again. And I'm like, what in the world is going on here? Someone's messing with me, you know. And I get up and I turn it off again. Well, the third time it came on, I saw my grandmother's figure, you know, outline of her ghost. And the light turns on, and I'm like, okay, that was her message to me, that there was such a thing as a heaven.
Yeah.
And I said, I got it. And I said, she's gone. Well, the next morning, everyone is calling at 6 a.m. in the morning and said, oh, your grandmother's passed. Grandmother's passed. You know, she's deceased. I said, I already knew.
Well, I think,
now, whether she, I did not see an orb, but I did see her ghost the third time. But she could have very well, you know, the energy is, they materialize from the orb, and the orb is nothing but energy.
Yeah, I have to agree with that, too, because I know when my father passed, it was just a very short few days afterwards, and I would see gold orbs. When I would talk about them, gold orbs would appear. When my grandmother passed, I had a music box that was hers, and it never worked. It hadn't worked in probably 20 years. And this music box would play, just randomly play for no reason. But, I mean, I think the orbs are energy-based anyway, and I think that there isn't just one set thing as to what they are, because I've seen the Foots play with them. I've seen them related to ghosts. I've talked to countless people that have had experiences of orbs coming up by them and towards them, and yet inside the orb is a being.
Mm-hmm.
And I've seen that as well. I had an orb out in the front yard that I thought was an orb. I actually found out it was a portal, but it looked like an orb, and it opened up so that I could see into it. And in fact, Janice, you were at the house. You were just coming outside,
yeah.
And I said, remember I said, did you see that? And you said, no, I didn't see it. I didn't see it. And like you could see into it and see a completely other world. But I don't think there's just one set thing as what these orbs can be, because there's been too many people that have had different experiences with them and seen different things.
Yeah.
You know, like I said, I've watched the Foots create them. They'll sit there in their hands, and then all of a sudden they'll open their hands and there'll be this orb ball in it. I had a friend of mine, we were doing some research out in the woods, and we went out at night, and there was a pale blue one that was, it was an orb. It was dancing around in the woods. We were actually sitting in her vehicle, and when we did, this orb was going back and forth, and all of a sudden it came straight at the door of the truck where I was sitting, and it got to the truck, and as soon as it hit where it would have hit the window of the truck, it dissipated.
Yeah.
I mean, we both saw it, and this thing was bigger than a dinner plate.
Well, it's just like, take another for instance. Up here in Tennessee, there's an area up toward Bristol that people all the time are claiming that they see orbs. Okay, and what I saw, I called ball lightning. Now, I don't know, you know, it was like there was lightning in this orb. I don't know how else to explain it, about the size of a baseball. And it was like lightning was striking with inside of it. But it was running along the ground, about 2 feet off the ground, in the air. And, I mean, it was absolutely moving like grease lightning, you know. It was really fast.
Yeah, I think that a lot of different beings use these orbs for many different purposes. I know they're all energy-based. I mean, that's about as...
about as well as we can describe it. It's all energy based.
Yep.
No, you're talking about like certain areas and stuff. I was coming back from Georgia, and right at the Tennessee-Georgia line, there was, I'm trying to think of what the fall, right there at the Cherokee National Forest, as you're coming through, didn't have cell phone service. There was a, I'm trying to think of what those falls were called, but there was some waterfalls, and my mom was with me, and we seen this little sign, it says such and such falls, so we turn off the road and start driving down to where this these falls were. Well, she looks to see time, and her clock on her phone, and we're not nowhere near where the time, you know, where it converts the time, you know, from Eastern to Central time. We're not, we're nowhere near the time zone. But her phone, the time goes back an hour. And I said, that's weird, because my phone, it said the normal time. Well, then her phone goes back to normal, and mine goes back an hour in this area, these falls. Now, this is, it really confused me. I told her there's got to be some sort of energy, something going on here in this area that had messed with our, you know, our cell phones, any type of technology we had, because it was weird. I mean, our, it's like we had went through something or was in something that was messing with our phone. Because, I mean, why would the phone, you know, they're set up, these cell phones are set up to, once you cross these time zones, you know, they automatically switch over. But we were nowhere near that. And our phones kept going back an hour. And then go back to normal, and then go back an hour.
Right.
It was crazy.
I'm going to take a break just a minute. I'm going to ask Holly the name of those falls. I know where you're talking about. I've been there myself, and yes, there is like a time warp.
Yep.
Those falls.
It's crazy.
That's on the state line between here and Georgia that Houdini actually walked across. What is the name of those falls? You don't remember? Where we lost time? You don't remember the name of them? Oh, okay. Okay. She said she doesn't remember. I'm sorry. I was hoping to help.
I've got it written down somewhere because I wanted to write it down. I wanted to do some research to see, you know, that area. I've got it written down somewhere. I'll have to look it up.
Yeah.
Actually,
back in the day, Matt, Houdini actually walked across those falls. There's like two peaks up there of the mountains, and he walked a tightrope across it.
Oh, wow.
Mm-hmm.
I remember reading about that.
It was one of his first major event things where he walked a tightrope.
It was really weird because we had just a hunch. It was like, okay, let's go drive down here real quick and look at these falls, you know. And then that's when all the cell phone and everything really, it was pretty crazy. And I was like, wow, we're nowhere near the time zone. And it definitely caught our attention. Very interesting area. Now, we were talking about energy and stuff. And
Matt, this is Dr. John. I remember when you told me that story. And that's exactly the story you relayed to me. And I thought it was very interesting. I have seen one location like that, and that is down at Tallulah Falls here. I played in Georgia. Some kind of interesting things happen down there. We need to find out what we're talking about. Go check them out. Sure.
I thought it was really neat. It blew my mind. I'm like, something's going on here, you know. Definitely caught my attention. Now, whenever you were talking about your grandfather with Fox, tell the people how he kind of got a relationship. Didn't he help him when he was little, when he injured or something?
Well, him and another man, my grandparents moved to Tennessee in 1943, and they actually, 1947, they had already bought the property and everything there, here in Tennessee, and they were clearing the land for pasture. They were cutting trees down, and him and this other man, either Fox was up in the tree or he was in, you know, down where the tree fell on him. I don't know which for sure because I wasn't alive at the time. But anyway, my grandfather took him in because it injured him, you know, and banged him up. Took him in, brought him in the house, and my grandmother had a fit because he was wrecking the house. So she made my grandfather take him up to the barn and put him in the middle stall in the front of the barn. And this is a front barn. We have two barns on the property. But the one that's actually up on the road is the one that he put him in. And in the middle stall is where he put him. And the parents of Fox took and broke him out of that stall. That stall has never been fixed. The wall of the stall has never been fixed to this day. But anyway, so he struck up a relationship with Fox, you know, and this little forest person started following him around. And every time he'd go out, I mean, my grandmother accused him of spending more time with them than with her, you know.
Now, to my understanding, didn't he call him Fox because whenever he would take off up there, he would tell other people he had a pet fox so they wouldn't question what he was doing?
Yes, yes. My grandfather was sort of secretive. Only the really close friends and family members knew anything about him. That was his way of protecting them. I mean, there is no protection law for them.
No.
No, they do.
We need to. Go ahead.
Go ahead.
No, I was saying we need to. You know, as far as everybody wants to protect them, and I think that's a great thing. But the protection that they need is just to be able to live their lives as they are. You know,
yeah,
and the
exactly.
only thing they need protection from is us. It's really quite sad because they are part human on the mitochondrial side, you know, and we're relatives, and the only thing that they have to be worried about is us.
Yeah.
Right. Area that I research, it's considered a Bigfoot sanctuary, is what they call, or they call it the Wood Booger up there. It's a Wood Booger sanctuary, and I've had some activity up there, but I'm kind of curious. I mean, I think the government are after these, you know, after these people, and they don't want it known because then they have to answer more questions. Have you guys had, like, a lot of government try and interfere that you've had to, you know, protect the...
Loaded question.
Yeah, that's a very loaded question. Robin, I'll let you go first, and then I'll answer.
How many hours
I probably should ask some of these questions off air, but I'm curious right now.
That's fine.
Yeah, that's all right. I mean, it's the reality of the situation. Unfortunately, the government does not want them displayed or known about for many reasons. You know, what you spoke of, yes, but there's a lot more to it than that. And they are a big problem. Most of the researchers that are heavily involved with this get some type of government interference, you know, some more forceful than others, I will say that. But they don't want it brought out. When Melba Ketchum did the DNA, that DNA was solid. You know, I mean, people can say what they want. I was on the inside of that loop. She is a very dear friend. I did not know her when I started working on the project with her. I simply got into it to help her. And so it wasn't like I, you know, had preconceived notions that because she's a friend of mine, I know she's telling the truth. I literally did not know her. I found her to be absolutely 1,000,000% credible. The public doesn't know half of what that poor woman has gone through, and they don't know half of the story. And the reason they don't is because of the government interference.
Yeah,
and that
exactly.
is what shut that project down. It was not being able to put it out in these, you know, papers, scientific papers. They weren't allowed to. The government is what shut that down. It had nothing to do with the papers themselves. I mean, you know, there's a lot more into that, you know, it's not my story to tell, and I'm not going to, but I will say this, that her science was legit. It was right on target. I had asked the forest people what they were before I ever met her, and they were very honest. They said, we're human like you and star people, and they pointed up, you know, do the math. I mean, that's coming from the source.
You know, but the government does not want this out, and they have gone to great lengths to stop it. You know, there's a lot of there's several reasons why they're doing it, and they've affected a lot of people's lives trying to keep it quiet. Unfortunately, you know, it's kind of like the news is already out. People are seeing them all over the place. People are having them all over the place and around their homes, you know, if they go on vacation, what have you, and they are there and they exist. And, you know, all this combined is the reason that Igor Borstev, myself, and Janice are working on this hominology project. People need information. This is not about going to the state capitol and demanding protection, because that isn't going to work. You cannot have them protected by our laws, because our laws are not their ways. It doesn't work. It will only cause a disaster for them. The protection they need is to be allowed to live their lives as it is and to be just left alone. You know, protection against being shot and harassed and tortured.
Yeah, and if there is going to be interaction, or learn to coexist with them. Learn to get along.
And that's what
I
think our project is really about. I mean, we want to be able to bring all sources of this research together. There are so many divided camps in this research. It is ridiculous. I mean, hate-filled, people going after each other. There's no reason for it. I think to some extent, the majority of us have the same goal, and that is we want to learn about them. They have a lot to teach us. They could be something that can really help save our planet as well as ourselves, because our biggest problem is us.
Yeah, exactly. I'm 100% with Robin on this. I mean, I was involved in with Melba, and basically a lot of my forest people friends were involved too, you know, and it's legit. Now, taking for instance that they are an unknown on the nucleus side. Okay. Now, in talking about government and whatnot, say for instance that you have in all mythologies and even in the Bible where the gods come down and they have children by, or the angels or whatever, by mankind, by the daughters of mankind. Okay, would that or would that not give the offspring supernatural abilities, what we call supernatural abilities?
Yep.
Absolutely.
Yep.
Think about that.
Yep.
Well,
now,
how is our government,
as simple people, going to control a supernatural being?
There is
exactly. Exactly.
Well, and I do want to point out one thing just real quick, not really to get off topic. When I was speaking to Melba's study and what the forest people told me they were, what Melba's paper states is that they are human on the mitochondrial side and unknown on the nuclear side. It's unknown listed because there's nothing on this planet
that they can
compare that comparison to. Okay, Melba did not come out and say these were ETs. She's never mentioned that. She never will, because she doesn't know. Okay, it came back nuclear as unknown. What I was told personally from the forest people is star people. Okay, I just want to put that out there, because a lot of people get things confused, and I didn't want any confusion with that at all.
Exactly.
Just wanted
to
clear that up.
And it's like, okay, we have a tendency to call anything that's not of this planet alien or ET, extraterrestrial.
Right, star people.
What have you, you know.
Good point. Nothing.
Well,
I know that they weren't going to let it out. And the reason I asked that was I know that they've questioned me. They've called me, asked me certain questions, because, of course, you know, I'm in this field, and I kind of caught on, because they'll try and act like they are somebody else that they're not when they call and try and get info from me. I was at the Harlan CryptoCon this past weekend, and I spoke there, and there were some researchers there, and they were talking about how to prove Bigfoot and Sasquatch existence, and you know how you need to do it and all this stuff, you know, if they're going to prove it. And I told them, I said, the government will never allow you to present it out to the world. I said, they will shut it down. It's never going to happen. So if you're doing it to prove it to the world, you're in it for the wrong reason.
Yeah,
they looked at me like that's crazy. I was like, I'm telling you, they won't. You know, they won't allow it.
They won't allow it. And my thought on it, and I tell, you know, I didn't speak in conferences for a very long time, not because I have a problem speaking in front of people, because I don't, but I was busy working with the forest people. I didn't care what was going on in the outside world.
Exactly.
Now I'm back doing it again, which, of course, strictly for John, because I just think the world of him. But I've been getting told by the forest people what information they want out. So that's kind of guided me as far as coming out in public. But as far as the military or the government goes, and I tell everybody this when I speak, I am not here to prove anybody. Okay, my job isn't here to prove it to anybody. I already have my truth because I live around it. I mean, we had just the other day two of them in my backyard. My neighbor had to come over and tell me, did you know there were two of them walking around your backyard? Yeah, okay.
Yeah.
But at the same time, again, with this project, I don't feel like we're standing up in this project saying, hey, we're going to prove this to the government. This is more of a project where we're learning, we're educating. You know, I think we need to separate trying to prove it to the government and stay on our own path of just trying to learn how to coexist with them in a healthy way. They are not all bad. They are not all good. There's a balance in both of them. And I think we would have more complicity with everybody if people had that information. I mean, of course, we're going to want to bring in the science and the anthropologists and bring everybody together. I mean, that's a main goal. And what we learn, obviously, can be shared. But I don't feel like, for myself anyway, this is about proving it to the government. They have their own agenda, and we're not going to change it. People have tried.
Exactly.
People have gotten in serious trouble trying to change it. They're going to do what they want to do. Are they going to get help from me? Not while there's a breath in my body. But they're going to do what they want to do, and that's their business. But I think on our end, there's so much that we can learn from them and teach other people. And, I mean, I think they're in a lot better place than we are, to be honest with you. Their culture is amazing. They've got a language, you know. They have a lifestyle. They have family units. And we have to be careful, even as researchers, when we go out in the field, I think, because now you're in their home. You don't want everybody tramping through your house, and they don't particularly like it either. So if people are going to be out there, and they're going to be out in the woods, and they're going to be doing the research or just vacationing or whatever it is they're doing out there, I think if we can educate people on how to do it the correct way, it's easier. Now, a perfect example is what happened over here when the two were in the yard. You know, I found out about it yesterday. One had been out in the backyard the day before and one the day before that, and they were two different individuals. I simply went over to my neighbor, who's a lovely, lovely woman, just adore her. And I said, okay, this is what it is. I mind spoke with one of them. He was just as sweet as can be. And I said, she said, well, how do I handle it? I said, okay, this is how you handle it. No problem. No fear, no aggression. Nobody got hurt. You know, there was no damage done anywhere, and everybody's just working out fine.
Yeah.
But
it's just like
their ways aren't ours.
Yeah. It's just like here, Winnie Bojo, we call him Bo for short. One evening I was speaking to another gentleman that is very aware of him on the phone. He comes up, he's standing out here in the side of the yard where the light isn't shining at the time because we have spotlights on the house and everything, and motion sensor lights. We do have coyotes and bobcats around here, and they are predators. They do hunt. You come in every once in a while, steal a chicken or, you know, the eggs, or I've even had them kill a goat. But anyway, and that's not the forest people. But Bo's standing out here, and he's dancing, and he's wanting me to say hello for him. And I just held the phone out and said, okay, talk to him, because he's standing right here, you know. And they did. They conversed a little bit, you know, and he's grunting and whatnot. And we had another person here that was buying a puppy. We have collies. We raise show collies. This other person was buying a puppy from us and had intended to spend 3 days here. This was the first night that he was here. I'm like, do not get in the light where this man can see you. This man is from New Mexico. I said, don't do that, Bo. Next thing I know, I'm in the house. Me and my daughter are sitting here. And here goes this head running by. Actually, I live in a camper trailer right now. But anyway, this head up and down the driveway, going past the window. And I'm like, oh, crap. I told you not to get out there where this guy could see you. You big idiot, you know. Oh, no, he's running up and down right in front of the spotlights and all, you know, making a practical joke. And he is a practical joker. He thinks it is funniest. If he can scare the daylights out of you, he thinks that's the funniest thing he's ever seen.
They have wicked sense of humor.
Yeah, a wicked sense of humor. So the man gets up at 5 a.m. the next morning. He says, oh, I've got an emergency. I need to go. And I'm like, what's going on? He says, well, I want this puppy, and I'll just take this puppy, and can I just take her home with me? Well, okay, not a problem. And he left. At 6 a.m., he was packed up and gone. He never said a thing. He didn't say a thing about seeing anything unusual. But I know that he did. I absolutely know he did.
Yeah, I mean, I think people that are around us long enough, it happens. The house I was at in Michigan, I didn't let very many people go there. And there were very, very few researchers I ever let on my property. And it wasn't that I thought unkindly of others, but it was just the protection of the forest people. And they, you know, people that are around you, they eventually see them. John was here a week ago, and he was out in the front yard with Papa Scott, and they were out there shaking the crap out of the trees at him. You know, Janice was here Thursday night, and they're running all over the roof like wild maniacs, having a good old time. I finally had to get hold of one of the adults and say, I don't know whose kids are up there playing, but the first one that busts my roof, there's going to be an issue.
Yeah, and they tore a shingle off the top of a roof back several months ago from being up there, you know.
I know. Now it's on the high peak. Now I got to get somebody up there to do it, and I don't want anybody I know because I'm afraid somebody's going to fall and get hurt. But, I mean, they do. They were out playing already this year. They were playing with the hose, and the animals, my animals were in the house at the time. It was during the day. And I heard the dogs go crazy into the backyard. They were barking and screaming, wanting out. And I thought, what's going on? It was so hot and humid. I didn't want them out there. And then I hear a hissing sound. I look outside. They had been playing with the hose, and they literally broke my hose. I have one of those boxes with the cranks on it to roll it up, and they had that all mangled, broke the connecting hose from the spigot to the box. They were trying to get water. They weren't, you know, nobody was trying to be naughty. And, you know, I asked who did it, and I was told by the parents the kids had done it, and they were very sorry, you know. No big deal. We went and got another one, and it hasn't happened since. But, like, when it's hot and stuff, I put extra water out. I'm the weirdo in the neighborhood. I put the water out for the birds. I put water out. I have water out for the butterflies, okay? and all the feral cats, and the buckets out for the forest people. And we have lakes and ponds all over where I'm at. It's not that they can't go get it, but they're generally around the, you know, a lot of them hang around the house. But I think, too, when we talk about these projects, we're talking like it's all here in the States, and it's really not. This is an international project. Not only, you know, of course, Igor's in Russia, so he has got all kinds of people over there that have experiences. I talk to many people all over the world, and they're having the same experiences there, too. I mean, there's a few differences culturally-wise because they're in different places, but overall, the same basic principles apply with all of them.
Yeah.
See, whenever I first started in this, I had my encounter, and of course, I thought it was a flesh and blood, you know, and which, you know, it is, but it's more supernatural too. But I had, you know, my mind was just in this little box, and I think that it got aggressive and scared me to put me where I am now, because I think if it didn't get aggressive and scare me, then my mind would still be in that little box instead of looking for answers. Since it had put me through that trauma, I believe it done it. I know it wasn't trying to kill me. If it wanted to kill me, it would have.
Exactly.
It just wanted to. It wanted to traumatize me to get me start looking for answers. It wanted me start thinking outside the box, and it took that type of trauma to get me to start thinking outside the box. And
yeah.
I'm curious. I was gonna say I'm curious. You know, it's put me to meet people now that I'd never met if it didn't put that trauma on me. And
And
I'm curious if that one is still alive. If because I'd love to have, you know, contact again with it.
Did your experience happen in West Virginia?
No, it happened up in Indiana. Up in Indiana.
Okay.
Tippecanoe River and the Wabash River. I lived on Sugar Creek, and it was
from
all this land.
Yeah, I think he's still alive. I'm not getting that he's passed.
I'm not either. All I'm getting is one in West Virginia is saying that yes, they're still alive. That's why I asked it happened in West Virginia.
That's pretty cool that you said West Virginia. Let me tell you, that's interesting. Okay, I just got a message from a guy this past weekend up in West Virginia about a sighting of seeing one, and he wants me to come up there and check it out and help him out. He's got like four little girls. He's scared. He's seen this twice now, back in January, and he said that he's hearing screams close to his house, and he's kind of scared because it's closer to his house, and he's got little girls out there. And you had said West Virginia. I'm thinking I'm supposed to go up there. It's meant for me to go up there.
It could be. And, Matt, if you do, do note this. They do have a natural curiosity toward children. They love
those children. Be careful.
I had the awfulest time with my youngest here that lives with me. And I think you met Holly there at the conference there, the Lizard Man conference. When she was little, I had the awfulest time keeping her in the house. And they would put her up to doing some weird stuff, out of the norm. It's like, for instance, Nikki one time wanted her to go, when she was 3.5 years old, wanted her to go meet this cart horse. And I'm like, what in the devil is a cart horse? And this child, 3.5 years old, hikes 3 miles, pitched a fit when I tried to bring her back to the house. Me and another woman that was visiting tried to bring her back to the house. She walked the road, and she laid down in the middle of the road, started pitching a temper tantrum. I felt like whipping her, you know, but you can't do that. But I'm like, okay. And when we picked her up, she was kicking and screaming and biting and clawing, you know, and I'm like, okay, we'll just put her down and we'll follow her. And she went, and 3 miles down the road is where she hiked to. We followed and make sure she wouldn't get hit by a car and all that stuff. And lo and behold, we didn't even know that these people had a donkey, but it was a jack donkey, little stud donkey, and we didn't even see it at first. And here this donkey starts braying and comes running from, there's two hills in this pasture, and it comes across both those hills right up to the fence, puts its head down, and Holly puts her head to that donkey's head. And it's like they're talking, communicating for just a few minutes. And she turns around and she says, okay, this is the cart horse. And Nikki had sent her on a mission, you know. And Nikki is a forest person. She's Foxy's daughter, by the way. Foxy's Sheba's daughter. And why am I trying to put that in there? Okay. And I was like, you know, so you have to watch them. I was at Don Keating's conference back in 2008. When was it? You were 8. And we were doing a camp out there instead of staying in a hotel. We were staying in tents, a bunch of us, a bunch of friends and us. And Holly gets up at 6 a.m. before anybody else had gotten up and sneaks off, and she's feeding all of our camp food, especially the marshmallows, to the young forest people, the children. And she's out there wandering around with them. So you do have to be careful of children because they, you know, they like children. They love children.
They do. And, you know,
but not all of them are
nice.
Nice. And another experience.
Have any advice
take another
for me
example.
To give this?
A friend of mine had a daughter that was 5 years old, and a female had lost her child and was trying to lure this child out to the forest, and she was going to kidnap her. So you do have to be leery.
Absolutely. I've gotten contacted by several people that have had concerns with their kids with them. You know, they're very maternal. They love their children fiercely. They really do. Now, like when my kids were little, my kids grew up with them around, especially my younger three. The other kids did as well. They were not quite as aware of what was going on, but they knew about them. My younger three were even more so. My granddaughter, she was 5, and she would go outside and she'd play in the sand because our whole property had sand on it. And they would roll rocks out over to her, and she'd roll them back, and they would play a game of rolling things back and forth, you know. They love kids deeply, but you have to be careful because they, again, and I can't say this enough, they don't look at things the way that we do.
No, they don't.
Our ways are not theirs. And I explained this to my neighbor as well yesterday because her granddaughter was visiting. She's a beautiful little girl, and she plays outside. You know, we let our kids go outside and, you know, we may see them through the window, or maybe we're making lunch or doing something, you know, and we're not right standing next to them, and we know they're safe, or we think they are because we can see them. But then if you reverse that and you look at it through a forest person's eyes, they see a child unattended outside alone, and that draws them
and
right in.
Nobody is supervising them.
Right. And so that draws them right in, which means they will take that child. Now, these beings can cloak. They are multidimensional. They can be flesh and blood one minute. They can be dimensional another minute. They will cloak. And I've seen this happen time and time again where they will be cloaked and they'll go up to something and go to grab it or touch it or whatever. And they can cloak whatever they're touching. And you get a lot of kids that people don't understand how their kids disappeared. They were there 1 second, then they vanished. Well, that's a possibility as to why they vanished. 90% of them aren't doing it to be mean. They're doing it because they think they're doing a good thing, but these kids can't survive because, you know, we're not used to the elements like the foots are. We don't have hair.
Right. Exactly.
You know,
I'm going to tell another thing, and I've never told this on to anyone except Mary Green knew about this. We were out researching in an area, me and Mary, and we had her daughter with us at the time. And we were taking pictures, trying to get pictures of this family unit group of the forest people. The most disturbing thing is we got a picture of a human, one of us, child, a little boy. He was in the picture, he looks like he's about 8 years old. No clothes on, except a rag, you know, I can't explain it. It may have been a blanket or something, but it was a rag at the time. A check, you know, a red and black checked rag that he had tied around his middle. And this mother forest person, she had 2 children of her own in the picture, and you see her in the background, and she is reaching toward this child. We searched high and low for missing children. We checked every missing children report that we could find from across the country. And nothing, nobody, there wasn't a report of this child missing or anything. And that has haunted me for years because we never could. And this was back in 2003. We never could find it.
We had a situation, and this was back in, I want to say, maybe 2011, 10 or 11, and there was a child that was on TV that they had said he was missing, and I didn't know this child. He was from Indiana. I mean, I certainly had never met him, but I saw that he was on there, and I thought, yeah, such a shame. I mean, that has to be a parent's worst nightmare, and
I said something to the Foots about it, and I said, you know, you guys are all over the place. And I was talking to the ones in Indiana, and I said, you know, you need to be looking for this kid. Is he down there? And one of them popped up and said, they'll never find him. And I said, what do you mean they'll never find him? And he showed me, you know, mind speaking, we've talked about this before, can be images, almost even a movie playing in your mind. And they showed me an image of a foot. Now, the foot that took him, I know, and he was bad. And I tried to tell the people for years that he was around that, you know, quit thinking this thing is good because he's not. And he had this child on his hip, and they showed me him running and actually taking this child into a portal. And to my knowledge, they never found that child. You know, I mean, they're just like with our people, there's good and bad with them. It's not they're predominantly good, they're predominantly bad. It's just like it is with our people. There's no difference. I mean, bad is bad, good is good. But they do. When it comes to kids, you cannot trust them. And I explained that to my neighbor. I said, you know, keep a close eye on your granddaughter when she's out there because, you know, they may, the group around here, I've got two South Carolina clans. I've got part of my clan from Michigan here. And Janice comes to visit now and then. And, you know, none of them that are here, and that's the one thing people do say, the few people that I do let come here, they're like, it's so peaceful. You can just feel that everybody's good here and gets along and it's calm. So I don't have a problem as far as thinking that they're an aggressive clan here that would purposely try to hurt a child. But the truth is, if a child is outside playing in the yard and they don't see a parent, they think it's fair game, you know. And there have been people in the state parks where the parents are there and they disappear.
Yeah.
There's countless numbers of children that have been taken in plain sight. So it's not that you can't let your kids out to play, but you have to be mindful of the fact that these things are out there. And they're, believe it or not, one of the nicer things that are out there. There's a lot of cryptids out there that people don't even realize that are there that are much more dangerous than the forest people.
Yeah.
But,
you
know, you have to be really mindful of it.
No.
And I really encourage you, Matt, when you go to talk to these people about it with the kids.
Okay. Now, is there anything that I could tell, like, the foot, like, hey, these kids, you know, is there anything I could tell them so that
Matt,
they don't bother the children?
In English. Just talk to them in English and explain, look, these children are out here, they're playing, their parent really cares for them, and we don't want anything to happen to them. And you could also say that, you know, their children are welcome to play with these girls, these little girls, but they are not to go off into the woods with them.
Yeah, my kids, my kids got taught early on, they can imitate voices. And when I say imitate it, I mean they are dead ringer. And my ex-husband was out in the woods one day, and he came in very upset because he was out hunting, and he said, you know, you're out there talking to me and scaring the deer away. And I said, I never left the house. And the kid said, Dad, you know, Mom never left. And he was all upset. But they had imitated my voice, and he could hear it. He said, I've known you for 15 years. I know what your voice sounds like. And so my kids went, the rule around our house was, if you hear me calling you, unless you physically see me, you do not show up. You do not come. You do not follow directions. If I need you to come to me, I will make sure you see me. You know, unless you physically see me, you don't go anywhere. Because we knew, you know, they can imitate the voices. And they did several times. And so that was the thing. So my kids always knew that. The other thing is, you know, talk to them. One thing that worked well for me when it came to even my pets, when I first moved out in one area in 2009, people are forever dumping their feral or their cats in my yard and that kind of thing, and I take care of them. Like I said, I don't turn anybody away. But they had gotten hold of one of the cats and done a lot of damage to this cat. And so I went out there, and I just talked to them, and I said, listen, you have your pets. You've got fox. You've got coyotes. There's a group around me that has a cougar. And I said, you've got all these things, and that's great. I don't bother your pets. You don't bother mine. Okay, I love them all. These are my children. And I try to put it where I made it where they could form that connection. Like, your children you love, I love my children. So I don't take your children and you don't take my children, you know, and make it simplified to them because, like I said, their ways are not ours. They don't understand our ways. And most people don't understand their ways. So you've got to, you know, talk to them in English. But simplify it and give them something so they can, you know, connect it.
Yeah,
and
connect
for the most part, they're good. Exactly. But like I said, you don't know which ones are, unless you are really good at it. We all can get misled. I don't care who we are. There are no experts in this. You know, anybody can be fooled.
Yeah, and right. Here's another fine example. For instance, I've worked with this one. I mean, and I say worked with. I have a relationship with this one. His name is Grumpy, and his little wife, her name is Toxana, and they have a child that is, at the time, was about the same age as what Holly was. And I'm up there, and I'm doing some looking around in their area, and lo and behold, if this mother doesn't toss a big twig at Holly's head, you know, I mean, it missed her by about an inch. And I'm like, I will go charging off up the hill toward her, you know, fussing and screaming. And I'm like a mother bear with a cub. And I said, you don't throw stuff at my child. I don't throw stuff at your child, blah, 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 you know. And the person that was with me was just dropped mouth open. They were in shock that I had gone up there and confronted this female Bigfoot. You know, they're like, holy cow, she could have taken your head off. I said, well, no, you know, you mess with my kids, you're messing with a totally different person.
Exactly.
Right.
But, you know, it just goes to show, you know, they can do some unpredictable things, even if they, you know, are really well
intended,
associated with you and have a, you know, a understanding relationship with you.
Yeah, I mean, their ways are different than ours. They don't have the same understanding that we do, but in that same respect, we don't have the understanding of their lives either. That's another reason for this project, is to bridge
now,
that gap.
Now, I will say this. Yeah, I will say this. There was a reason for them tossing the stick at Holly's head. She was fixing to step on a damn snake, but at the time I didn't see the snake.
Yeah, I mean, in their mind, they're justified for everything that they do, and they have a reason for it, even if we don't know it. But I mean,
it's,
Matt,
it's
I would advise you. Yeah, I would advise you, Matt, when you go talk to these people and speak to the forest people there, put it in a way that they can understand it. Like I said, you know, like I do with mine, I love my animals. These are like my children, just like you have yours. So you can make that connection for them, so it's not just empty words going off into space. I mean, they're highly, highly intelligent. But like I said, even though they can understand us, they don't always understand our ways, or they think they're silly. I've had them before laugh and say, you know, they weren't going to follow this rule or that rule that I have because it didn't make sense to them, you know, and I'm like, okay, but.
It's very similar, like my daughter, where she's seen those baby skunks out on the road and she gathers them up and takes them back to their mom. They can see that and see they're unattended. Very similar.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and that's the thing. And I talked to somebody that had a case that they were working on where there was a couple of children, and they had a lot of the forest people in the backyard, and they would talk to one of the children and try to get them closer and closer and closer, and these people just thought that was the greatest thing in the world, and it was wonderful, and they just thought it was so special that this little two-year-old, you know, was able to connect with them. And I'm like, no, this isn't wonderful and special, because I spoke with the forest person that was doing it, and they didn't want to hurt her, but they had a small child and thought that, you know, our type of small child would make a great playmate for theirs. And, you know, so they don't, I mean, I'm not saying that some don't do it with bad intentions, because they do. They absolutely do. But there's a lot of them that don't do it to be bad or to, you know, hurt anybody. But the end result is generally the same. I'm not saying that some of the kids can't survive, but I will say that our bodies don't acclimate to outdoor life like the forest peoples do. And a lot of the children don't survive due to, you know, exposure. Whether it's warm outside or not, our bodies just are not made for it. Yeah, the elements will get them before the forest people will. I mean, they aren't normally the type that would kill them. They're very family oriented. They love their children deeply.
Mm-hmm. And
you know,
we are.
Said it's a concern.
Yeah, and not only that. Take for instance, the child that we saw is in the picture was very well nourished, but
yeah,
we don't eat raw meat. I mean, you know, raw meat, take a deer. If a deer is infected with what they call those botfly larvae or something, if we take that into our system, eat that meat raw and get one of those in our system, it's going to work its way out of our skin. They're awful, you know, and we don't process plants real well. They eat a wide variety of plants that we could never eat. It would kill us to eat them.
Well, and I think their stomachs can handle more of the food that's spoiled as well. I mean, I get some of them that come to me because they've got stomach aches and, you know, they want ginger. And just like when Janice was here last week, they were very adamant they wanted cumin. And I kept saying, what do you want the cumin for? And they'd say, well, just because we want it. And, you know, I finally got it out of them. It has to do with their digestion. But, you know, we are not able to consume and digest what they can. You know, I mean, they don't have a problem feeding the child, you know, if it's something that's, but whether or not it will hurt that child is debatable.
Yeah.
You know, some clans cook more with fire. Some clans don't want that. They want the raw stuff. Like Janice said, we just can't tolerate it.
Right. And it's just like another, for instance, okay, what was it that they told Holly to get and she got it and was taking it for that awful cough?
Tumoric.
Because one of them was actually present at the conference and it cloaked.
More than one.
It came in, it touched Holly in there in the back and was trying to draw this pneumonia out of her. And it told her, it says, get the turmeric. Turmeric from the lady at the Watkins table. And she did. She was told how to put it, make a tea out of it, and to drink it. And she's over this stuff.
Yeah.
Believe it or not, she's over it.
Their medicines are so far advanced for ours. You know, I have a series of health issues, and Bo from Janice's group and then also Shadow for mine, because he's over here yelling, don't forget about me, had told me about some things to take that would be helpful, and they truly are. It was a matter of the first time you took it, you felt better, and you got relief. You know, I mean, their natural ways work. We are so set up in our society to get these manufactured medications because that's going to work. And I'm not saying that they don't. What I am saying is we've forgotten about the natural products that are available that actually
do work. Well, the natural is a lot better for
it.
Natural
is
a lot better for it.
God forbid we have something better.
Yeah.
But, I mean, in the forest people, their medicine works. Now, there are times that it doesn't. They come up to me to be healed or to have help with or whatever. And, you know, I do what I can. But a lot of it does work. But they're even hesitant to give it to us because people in our race and species just, you know, they turn it into a money marketing product and they forget about the intent of why we have it, or they forget that we got it from the forest people and they don't want to be used. So they're very secretive with it. They only give it to certain people. You know, I feel blessed that they have helped me. But, I mean, I can see where they're coming from because they don't want to become a market, a business venture for somebody. That's not what their gift of their medications or medicine is for.
Mm-hmm.
But it works. Like, again, this all goes back to the same reason we started this whole project. We want people to learn. You know,
that,
I mean, this is
human race is horrible.
It really is. It's incredibly sad that the biggest problem that they have in their lives is us.
Yep.
Yeah.
I mean, they're selfish. It's horrible the way the world
they're
is.
They're out
and
for
people,
themselves. They don't care about anybody else. They will squish you like a bug rather than look at you. And that's just not the principle that the forest people work on. You know?
Exactly.
This is why when we did this, and Igor, it was Igor's idea to do this, and he's talked about it for as long as I've known him, probably even before. And this isn't about making money, because there's no way to make money. We don't want to make money. It's not the goal. This is about educating people, learning for ourselves. You know, we want to get all these researchers together and let's start, instead of trying to kill each other all the time, let's learn from each other. There's a lot of misinformation out there.
it does take money to run these conferences.
Exactly.
It does take money to, you know, hold any kind of a speech or anything. I mean,
well,
I'm sure that you pay a little bit for Blog Talk Radio, John, you know.
People seem not
to understand that. But, yeah, you know, funding would be great. Donations are great, you know.
Right, and we will have links up where we will be taking donations. And the money that we use, my point was that this isn't a money-making project for us. The money
we're not lining our pockets.
No, the money that comes in is going to go back into the research and the education. You know, it takes money to get equipment. It takes money for travel to different places. You know, the conferences take money, the pamphlets, the media stuff, all that takes money. So, yes, we are going to open lines eventually for the donations. That's getting set up as we speak. And we encourage anybody that can help with it, please do. But as far, my point was, we didn't do this as a business. You don't make
money.
Right,
you're a nonprofit organization.
Exactly. You don't make money off the forest people. That's not our goal. We're doing this because we're passionate about it. We feel it's the right thing to do. We not only want to help the forest people, but we want to help our own people. Because one of the biggest problems with everybody coexisting together is the lack of knowledge from either side. And it's like a standoff because we can't get the forest people to behave if we can't get our people to behave. And we can't get our people to behave because they won't back down unless the forest people do. We need the information out there so people know how to act and behave accordingly around them.
Exactly.
You know, and the ones that get angry, you know, and I'm not talking about the ones that are bad. Like I said, we've got, you know, like psychopaths and rapists and murderers and everything too. And they're not any different. But the biggest problem is the confusion. And I think the forest people not get confused, but they get frustrated with us. And a lot of times that will act out. Now, the one that was in the backyard that the gentleman saw growled at him. He didn't growl because he was aggressive. If he wanted to hurt him, he would have done it. He growled because he was frustrated. He was standing there. The gentleman didn't know he was there. And he was trying to stay quiet, not a sight. And the gentleman just happened to be walking that way and came right up on top of him, you know, and saw him. The gentleman did not act inappropriate. He was very calm. The forest person was calm. He made the growling noise just to say, hey, bot guy, I'm right here. You know, like, you know, the stump you think you see is not a stump, it's me. Yeah, or this tree. And it ended very calmly. The gentleman stood there, was well-behaved, stayed calm, and the forest person looked at him and simply turned and walked off. There was no aggression. There was no conflict. There was no problem. But had, the gentleman reacted differently, it could have changed the entire experience.
Yeah.
You know, I think all of us, and I'm talking about our type of human, if we're approached and handled in a disrespectful or mean or terrifying way, we are going to react to protect ourselves. And I think people need to realize that the forest people aren't any different.
Yeah.
You know, it's shocking for people to look at them because they look different than us.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. People will call them all kinds of names because of the way they look. Well, you know what? We don't look any better to them.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, we look like bald things running around, you know? So it's all everybody's perspective. But I mean, this is one of the main goals that we have, other than bringing everybody together to learn from each other. We want to try to pull that science and the anthropologists in with the regular researchers and contactees and habituators, because right now everybody's in separate boxes and nobody's working together. And we're spinning our wheels. We're not moving forward. We're not going, we're in certain areas we're going backward, but I mean, we're just basically spinning our wheels in one place, and that's got to stop because there is a lot to learn on both ends. Now, they don't all want to come forward and be standing out in front of everybody, but they should be let to do that if they want to. If they want to stay secluded and hidden, let them do it. That's their life.
The thing I've come across, these researchers, they have different agendas. A lot of them are doing it to try and get money or try and get fame, and they're all in it for the wrong reasons.
Well, it's like I've been quiet for years. Nobody knew about me. I've had them around since I was a kid. Yes, and I was quiet until I did the international conference in Siberia with Igor Borstov. And then all of a sudden everybody knew who I was, and I came back, and I just went back to life as usual with them. I didn't have this big need. I did a couple small conferences because it was for somebody that I knew. But other than that, I turned everything down. And I mean everything.
Yeah.
I had TV shows. I had radio shows. I had blog talk shows, conferences. I turned every bit of it down because that's not what I'm about. My concern, and Janice is the same way. That's why we clicked so well. We're not about all these other things in our world. We're about them. We're about the forest people. And that's the same thing with Igor. Igor is a figure in the media. Everybody knows him, and that's wonderful. And he's a beautiful person. And the forest people love him. His part in all this is that he can reach the public. You know, and that's a good thing because he can help get that message out, and he's able to be invited to all these places for the research, all of which is extremely valuable. I mean, we all have our own little parts that we play. It's like a giant puzzle, and if you don't have all the pieces, it doesn't work. You know, there's not anybody more important than the other one.
Exactly. But I tell you what, this is Dr. John jumping in. It's about time for the British lady to let us know our time is up. And what I'd like to do is I would like to invite you two ladies back in a couple of weeks. Would you like to come back and have another round table discussion?
Sure. Sure. Yeah, sure.
Well, that's all that's great. I mean, we'll talk in the meantime, but it's been wonderful talking to you. Matt, it's been great having you on here. And let's see, I guess we've all got what we're getting ready to do. I'm getting ready to talk at the Alien Conference and Expo in Spruce Pine this weekend. Matt, what are you heading out doing this week?
This weekend here, I'll probably I'm going to talk a little bit about that. Talk to this man. I may try and go out and out to his place and talk to him. Probably. If I can. If not, then I'll probably just go fishing. But I've got an expedition I'm going out on here in like 2 weeks in an undisclosed location. But pretty much I'm just going to do a bunch of research here for the next probably month and a half, try and stay out of thing. I apologize for asking so many questions, John.
Don't apologize.
I could talk to them for hours.
Don't ever feel bad about questions. I mean, without questions, we don't get answers. You're more than welcome to ask as much as you want.
Yeah.
I appreciate that.
Exactly right. And now I'll say, Robin and Jan, what are you ladies doing this weekend? Anything exciting?
Taking care of kittens, getting them socialized so that they can go into
That's a good thing.
You know what? I've got a small wedding reception.
For strays, and we take in and foster orphan animals, and we get them up to an age so that they can be adopted out.
Well, that's wonderful.
I'm
Robin,
just hanging out this weekend. Well, I've got a small wedding reception that we're going to go to Saturday night. Other than that, I'm setting up some things out in the woods for the forest people. I'll be working on that and just kind of hanging around here and interacting with them. It's going to be relatively a quiet weekend.
Well, yeah,
quiet as it gets here.
Yep.
Yeah, then you'll be here the following weekend.
Yep. So, listen, thank you so much, Jan Carter and Robin McCrary. Thank you so much for being with us today on Bigfoot and Company. Matt, thanks for being here.
Thank you, guys.
Thank you, guys.
And we'll be back next week, probably at 4 o'clock next week, not 3 o'clock. I had a little work commitment that I had to get to. So I want to say thanks to everybody, and we'll see you next week on Bigfoot
Sounds good. Take care.
Company. Have a good one.
Bye.
Thank you. Bye-bye.